You're listening to Lavender Louisville, a Racing Louisville podcast.
Hello, and welcome to Lavender Louisville, the podcast dedicated to Racing Louisville FC. I'm Joe Havelda.
I'm Cody Ruth.
On today's show, we recap Racing's first two games, look ahead to their next matchup, and discuss big news out of the NWSL and what it means for Big Perp. But before we kick off for pregame warmups, Cody, let's do a quick review of what is and is not reviewable for VAR.
Yeah, not to be Freddy foreshadowing, but VAR is going to be coming up a couple times over our conversations today. And VAR can only be used, and I can't stress that enough, can only be used under four circumstances. The first is goal or no goal. So if a goal is scored, but on review, there is a foul that would have not allowed the play to go forward, they can call the goal back. The same as if there was a goal not allowed. And let's say that upon review that it did, in fact, completely cross the goal line when the line judge did not signal that it did, and it would be allowed. The second is penalty or no penalty. Really straightforward. Was the foul sufficient? Was the foul inside the box? That kind of thing. The third is straight red. So if somebody gets pulled for a straight red offense, that is reviewable, but double yellow leading to a red is not. And the fourth is mistaken identity, where the VAR ref comes back and says, no, you gave the card to the wrong player. You need to go back and reevaluate that.
Fair enough. Can't wait to see how that's going to play out for us in our time coming up. But lots to get to today, so let's kick off the first half. Since our last episode, Racing kicked off its 2023 season with an away trip against the Houston Dash. It was a hard-fought 0-0 draw, and Racing came away with the point. Cody, what were your takeaways from the season opener?
All right, the first thing is we have five brand new starters. We have Uchenna Kanu up front, Ari Borges, and for this game, Eli Pikiyamsa in midfield, Carson Pickett and Abby Erceg defending. And due to a little bit of the natural rotation where Pikiyamsa, who should be our center back, rotated up, we also saw Holloway get the start at center back. Now, Ellie is fulfilling a destroyer role at center defensive mid. Now, midfielders, because there's so many different ways for them to play, they're usually broken down with where they're playing and their general role. And so in this, the central defensive mid plays right in front of the defense and helps control play before it gets to our back line and coming out of our back line. And Ellie does a really good job as a destroyer, which, you know, a really defensive role, but with us playing in a high press, it really feels more like a box-to-box midfielder that, you know, plays both ends. And Millay has been pressed into service for our right wing back and really tearing it up. Like, she's, I know we've seen her in this role before, but she's really taken a shine to it this year.
Yeah.
And one of the very first things that I saw as we were moving through the Houston game this year, we're playing out of the back more and we've got a lot more confidence. You know, we want the ball at our feet. You know, we don't see so many long balls just hucking it forward and hoping. And DeMello is just still an absolute stud for drawing fouls. I mean, she is such a handful, and this is only her sophomore season. So that's the big takeaways that I saw. We had a lot of good looks, a lot of solid defense, but we're still doing a lot of passes into empty space, which I feel that as the season goes on and the players that we have moving forward get a little more acclimated to being able to read when we're going to be playing forward like that. You know, we're going to see more of our forwards getting in on the run, you know, getting behind those defenders and, you know, just causing general chaos. But a couple of the big takeaways for me for individual players, I mean, Millay, I can't praise her enough. Right before the end of the first half, there was a situation where there was a scrum inside of our box. We were big risk of conceding a point. Millay got in there, you know, and got knocked down on top of the ball and held it. I mean, you had Dash players saying they're trying to toe poke around her. So, you know, she's down there
literally kicked
and,
her in the legs. Yeah,
absolutely. And Lund was finally able to get down there and, you know, curl the ball out from underneath her. But, you know, Millay literally laid her body on the line for the team. Yeah. And Holloway, serviceable center back. She's been questionable for me from last year, obviously. Yeah. She got put in and conceded a goal almost instantly. So it just left a bad taste in my mouth. But, you know, in Houston, she stood up and really passed the test. And Lund, I mean, I said that it's almost criminal that she hasn't been called up. But in the 69th minute, she did this amazing double save.
Yeah.
First shot came from, you know, inside the 18-yard box, and she did a quick palm save. It rolls out, and a Dash player gets on it and tries to put it in the lower 90. Lund is able to get a hand on it just enough to slow it down. And while it's still rolling towards the goal, she's able to reach in and finally curl it up. I mean, I can't talk well enough about Katie Lund. I mean, honestly, you got to feel bad for the rest of the goalkeeper union, because with talent like that, you know, you're going to have to wait for some rotation to happen to get some game minutes. And I know at the game, you and I were talking about a tale of two halves, but I went back and watched, and really getting into the stoppage time after that scrum with Millay, we took possession of the game throughout all of stoppage time. And so all that happened was we not only kept momentum from that, but put our foot on the gas.
Yeah.
And one of the things that I think is really funny, as much as we've looked at Monahan all preseason, we were saying she was going to be our other right back, opposite Carson Pickett. She's getting all her minutes at forward.
Yeah, so, I know.
I mean, don't get me wrong. I like it. I mean, she's a strong player up there, but still kind of wanting that that wing back. So, yeah, what did you see out of the Houston game?
A lot of the same things. The number one thing that stood out to me was, like we said, there were five new starters out of 11. So half the team was new to the team this year in the offseason. And I think the first thing that I texted you in the first 10 minutes of the game was they look very solid out there and cohesive, right? Their passing and their link-up play is much stronger than it was even last season. I noticed when one of Racing's players was on the ball and bringing it up out the back and into the midfield, midfielders were dropping into space to give the person with the ball an option to either continue moving forward with the ball or giving them an option to pass to. And it's obviously something that they must have been working on, because it didn't look by accident. Players knew where they needed to be, and the player on the ball knew where people were going to be. So that it offered passing lanes. It helped make passing crisper and just more accurate. So that was the first thing that stood out to me. The second is, yeah, I was a little bit surprised by some of the lineup choices based on what we had predicted 2 weeks ago, based on what limited knowledge we had coming into it with all the new players and not being able to see a whole lot from preseason and really just making educated guesses. I was surprised at Laura Millay at right back instead of Paige Monahan, but I was not disappointed. because in the past, she's played back there for sure. I still hold, and I know a lot of people have differing opinions on this, and that's fine. My personal opinion, I think midfield is her best position. I think she's serviceable at right back, but I didn't ever think that she was great at right back. I'm starting to change my mind on that. She is legitimate back there. And we'll talk about the Washington game in a minute, but both games really solidified that perception for me. So she's been fantastic. She never stops running. Like you said, she literally throws her body on the line for this team. And I just can't say enough good things about her, but I do see improvement in that position from her from last year. So that was a very pleasant surprise. The other one was, you were right, Ari Borges started in midfield. And having seen her play now, I don't know why I ever would have questioned that. She's fantastic. She's so good on the ball, obviously, with her feet and her flair. Her passing is very deliberate and clean. She has really good vision, and she also presses really well. Another change that I was really surprised about was flipping Jessica McDonald to the left wing and putting Wong Shuang in the right wing. I asked Carson Pickett in an interview last week about this specifically. If you haven't listened to that, it is still up. You should go give it a listen. Carson's just amazing. But I asked her specifically about Jess starting on the left and Wong Shuang on the right. And she said that as a right-footed player, Jess prefers to play on the left because she can cut inside and either send in a cross or a shot with her right foot, which she did a few times and does very, very effectively. I told you I wouldn't be overly surprised if this happened, and I wasn't, was Uchenna Kanu getting the start at striker. She'd only been with the team for about a week and a half. That was the only reason I thought maybe she needed a little bit more time before Kim started her, but Hugh said, nope, I'm all in. She's in. She is so good. I am blown away by Uchenna Kanu. I think she does not look intimidated by this league at all. She looks very confident. Because the other thing, we talked about five new starters from Racing. Three of them were making their NWSL debut in Ellie Pikiyamsa, Ari Borges, and Uchenna Kanu. I don't think any of them looked intimidated by the league. They looked like they belonged out there. Uchenna Kanu among them as well. She has a motor that doesn't stop. She's hungry, but she's also really, really smart. She presses really well. She reminds me a lot of Jessica McDonald and how she tracks back and defends and presses and tries to win the ball back, but she's 10 years younger. So I think she's going to be getting her first goal sooner rather than later. I cannot wait. The only other thing that I have written down for this that really stood out is Abby Urseg at center back is so calm in defense. She never looks rattled. She never stops talking to her back line. So there's lots of communication going on there. And obviously we talked about how she comes in with that built-in partnership with Carson Pickett. That showed because Carson would get up on the wing when Abby had the ball and they were playing out of the back. And a lot of times, instead of playing out of the back through the midfield and then up into attack, if she saw a lane through the midfield to bypass it all the way to Carson Pickett on the wing, she would take it and that pass got completed every time. So that partnership is going to be really fun to watch and very effective for how Racing wants to play this year.
I will say that Abby Urseg, I mean, there's nothing about what we've seen from her that surprised me. I mean, she's just rock solid. I mean, for me, that's that woulda, coulda, shoulda about putting her next to Bonner. Man, can you imagine? Absolutely heartbreaking. But I know Bonner wanted to go back home, and you know, we absolutely respected her wishes, and she's still setting the league on fire over there. But
I don't have a whole lot else about this game, to be honest with you.
Well, I mean, what can you say about a 0-0 draw? That we look good. I mean, we both had chances. Frankly, I think that Racing looked the more dangerous of the two teams, which that's a big surprise. And we were able to shut down a Houston Dash team that made the playoffs last year and looks just as hungry this year.
and got stronger in attack by adding Deanna Ordonez, who the racing was essentially able to shut down. I think the only really nervy shots from Houston were two from Ebony Salmon, one in the first half, just inside the box. She had a nice shot on goal that Lund didn't have a whole lot of trouble with. She tipped it over the bar. I think I would have been surprised if that had troubled Katie Lund. And then one, I think it was late in the second half when she was on the other side in the box. Cross came in and Salmon first timed it out of the air, but missed wide. Other than that, I didn't feel too threatened by Houston's chances. I agree that I think Racing had the better chances. And just to run through some stats of the game for any number nerds like me, total shots, 15 for Houston, 17 for Racing. Shots on target were 7 for Houston, 5 for Racing. Very even on the possession, 54 to 46 in favor of Houston. Pass accuracy, 77% for Houston, 75% for Racing. That's another huge number that I think stands out for me, is Racing increasing their pass accuracy. And that is a huge improvement over last year that I'm very, very excited to see continue. 15 fouls for Houston to Racing 6. And I think that 15 is generous because there are quite a few that I feel like were not called, especially on Sav DeMello. 4 corners for Houston, but 9 for Racing. So there are a couple stats in there that show you, just from the numbers, in a very, very, very evenly matched game, who could get the edge on the more dangerous team. And I feel like that was Racing, which was a really, really good showing for their season opener in a tough away game.
Yeah, for sure. I think now would be a good time to plow on to the Washington game, because I've got a lot to say about this.
I have about a quarter page of notes for Houston and an entire page of notes for Washington. So yeah, let's move on to the Washington game. Home opener. Oh man, what a game. We were there. It was such a pretty, pretty day. Pretty April day in Louisville for that home opener. It was not. It was about 48 degrees with 35-mile-an-hour winds the entire game. We both predicted a fairly comfortable Racing win in this game, but the hopes were gone with the wind, man. That just literally blew those hopes away. Really strong first 15 minutes, in my opinion. I think it was very evenly matched. Teams kind of figuring out what that wind was going to do to them. I think Racing had the better chances in those first 15 minutes. Again, really good passing, good vision to move the ball up the field. And I'm just going to get right to it, man. Eli Pikiyamsa going beast mode. We were sitting third row off the field on the halfway line, so it was right in front of us. Eli gets the ball in the midfield. 4 opponents surround her, and she literally just flung them off of her and did it herself. Pushed him away, got out of it, and made a really clean pass to move the ball up the field. And the entire stadium went wild because of that effort.
Yeah. Going back and rewatching that particular sequence, I mean, completely surrounded and bodies through 3 defenders. I mean, they didn't stand a chance. They were literally just escorted out of Pikiyamsa's way. And then after she, you know, removes these 3 defenders from her field of influence, the 4th looks at her and is about to engage, and she says no, and just passes the ball right past her directly where she needed it to go.
Yeah.
And so completely embarrassed their entire midfield.
I turned to you at one point right after that and just posited a thought, because once again, Pikiyamsa was starting in place of Jalen Howell, who did end up subbing in later. And our assumption was, once Jay's back, that Eli will slide to that center back spot that Rebecca Holloway has been playing in. And that's exactly what happened when Howell was subbed in. But I turned to you after Eli went beast mode and I said, I love Jalen Howell. I'm a big fan of Jalen Howell. I think she's one of the best defensive mids in the league, but I've never seen her do that.
Yeah.
And I almost this is going to sound so weird because Howell's amazing and she's our captain, but when she takes that spot back and moves Eli to the center back position, do we see that as much from Eli?
I mean, with us in the high press, Maybe. A couple of things to look at with this. I mean, Pikiyamsa is 23 years old. I mean, she's one of the youngest on the team.
Yeah.
We've got her under contract for 2 years with a mutual option for a third. I mean, this is a lady that I can't imagine we wouldn't sign her for a third just on the strength of. I mean, and so I am comfortable with partnering Pikiyamsa and Ursig in the back. I like the fact that we do have the option of having depth at our CDM. But that causes a knock-on problem that I want to go ahead and talk about. As much as Holloway, I feel, has improved, she was directly at hand for both of the Washington goals. Mm. In the 16th minute where Hatch scores, I mean, you go and look, and directly Holloway was boxed out and Hatch was one-on-one with the keeper. I mean, that is exactly the kind of thing that Pikiyamsa would not have abided by. Fair. She is not going to be removed from that ball. She is going to stick there and continue to be a nuisance. And then the second goal in the 32nd minute, I mean, it's one of those things. We were caught in transition. We were moving the ball forward, just happened to lose possession at a bad time right in the transitional period. Ursig had already moved up to start establishing a defensive line, and Hatch splits the defenders, who it was Holloway and Canoe, actually. Holloway, I feel that given the speed that we saw in stoppage time of the Houston game, she's got a good motor on her.
Yeah.
But she just did not engage the Jets fast enough to cause enough of a problem for Hatch on that second, where yet again, it was Hatch one-on-one with Lund, and I'm never going to blame a keeper for letting a shot through with, you know, that kind of a look. So Holloway was directly at hand for both of those goals. And so is she improved? Yes. Is she still somebody that I want to have at center back? Yes. But I'm not comfortable with it. Having more depth at that center back position is still something I'm looking towards.
Yeah. On the same note, not to pile on to Holloway, because I forgot to mention in the Houston game that one of the biggest compliments I can give her is that we didn't call her name that much. And that's what you want from a center back. In this game, in the second half, there was also, it didn't lead to a goal, but there was also a breakaway, a counterattack from Washington down the right side, where Holloway was all the way up the halfway line, not really marking anyone. Carson Pickett was still up the field in the attack, so there was basically no one covering that right flank. And Rebecca Holloway was kind of in no man's land, watching the ball come at her, and that opened this perfect lane for a beautiful through ball to the runner on the wing that Abby Ursic ended up coming over to cover. And I texted you at that point and said, I don't know what Holloway was doing right there. So it's a minor point. I don't want to pile on her because she is very good and very serviceable. But if we're going to give, you know, glowing reviews of all the players, we want to be fair and point out a couple things we weren't as happy with. Uchenna Canoe, I'm going to go back to her, though. In that first half, she looked even better than in the first game. I have written down again her work ethic. She doesn't stop. She stole the ball off the center back at one point, who on her blind side didn't even see her coming. Ended up getting a weak shot off, but I loved that effort. I have found that Louisville sports fans of any sport appreciate one thing above all else, and that's effort. And she puts in a ton of effort. It was really disappointing to see her go down injured in that first half and miss the rest of the game, because if she hadn't, I think she would have scored in that game for sure. It's not really full info, but I did talk to someone from the front office yesterday and asked about her because we haven't really heard anything about that. He told me that he hadn't heard, but from what he does know, it doesn't look bad. I think they were just being very, very precautionary because it was a head injury, as they should. So, and it's 2 weeks until the next game. So I'm optimistic that she'll be fully fine by the time they head out to LA.
Yeah. In the first 45 minutes of the game, it wasn't that we were not dangerous, but the first 15 minutes, you know, there was a little bit of back and forth. After the first Hatch goal in the 16th, that's where Washington really came into their own and started taking control. But even then, Uchenna Kanu was going out and making them have to play honest ball, because mm-hmm. if they gave her any space at all, not just the sequence right before she went off injured where she had a very dangerous look on goal, but even just a few minutes before that, in the 30th minute, another really dangerous time where she caused a lot of problems for that back line. And if we were to hop back real quick to the Houston game, in the 54th minute, there was a beautiful ball. DeMelo
yep.
takes it from the midfield over to Jess McDonald on the wing, who put a really beautiful pass right behind the Houston back line in front of their keeper. And I think if Kanu was a little more comfortable with how great McDonald is on assists, she would have made that run, and that would have been a goal.
Yep.
I mean, Uchenna Kanu is all my fears about her transitioning into this league are completely unfounded. I mean, she's an absolute terror, and I love it.
Here's one final point on Kanu is when I was talking to the guy from the front office yesterday, I was singing Kanu's praises, just like we've been doing. And he said that as good of a player as Uchenna Kanu is, the data suggests that Tembi Kotlana is even better.
And that's terrifying.
Yep. I mean,
so I feel that we're probably going to see her at least on the bench in the next game, because Kotlana has been playing some with the team during the inter-team scrimmages, during practice, some of the more high contact stuff. You know, she's still getting pulled out, from what I understand, mm-hmm. but she's got more and more time, and I anticipate that given another couple of weeks, we're going to see her at least, you know, on the bench.
That's really exciting.
Now, another name that I want to throw out there before we start getting into a couple of the highlights, Kirsten Davis is, I mean, as good as she was last year, I mean, she felt like an NWSL quality player within just a couple of games.
Yep.
And I'll be damned if she's not better. Not just better, but smarter and possibly even a little faster. It's scary.
Yeah. I pointed out to you again right in front of us when she came in, she was right at midfield. And I think the keeper, it might have been a goal kick or something, but their keeper booted it up the field, and it was coming right at Davis and the Washington player behind her. They're both looking up at it, and you'd expect both of them to jump for 50-50 ball. Davis didn't jump. She let the Washington player jump and head it, and then it came right down to Davis's feet. She took it and ran off with it. So just little adjustments like that that were so smart and subtle shows me that she has also grown as a player, which is very exciting.
And in the 61st minute, she motors up the field like no one else on the team can, man. She's wow. Just sent it wide to the left on this remarkable solo run that, I mean, if you're telling me that Davis is on the depth chart, that's just mind blowing. I mean, another year or two, and she could be a starting forward for half the teams in the league.
So there is also a point, moving on to Abby Ersegg real quick, that she was one-on-one with Trinity Rodman out on the wing. Trinity Rodman had the ball, was facing her down, and tried to do some dipsy-do fancy footwork. And Ersegg just stood her ground and then took the ball off of her and ran it up the field. Like she wasn't impressed. Trinity Rodman's in her third season. Abby Ersegg, I think, is in her 13th. And she just, you just go back and watch it. She just looks at her while Trinity's dancing around the ball. And you just, Ersegg's just like, I'm not impressed. It took the ball and ran away with it.
And I tell you what, on my Racing Louisville 2023 bingo card, I did not have Ersegg scoring our first goal.
I didn't either. Looking back, I feel kind of dumb. But less than a minute into the second half, down 2-0, Racing wins a corner. Wong Shuang sends it in from the left side. Abby Ersegg jumps roughly 11 feet into the air and heads it into the goal. Here's a fun fact. That goal off the corner was the first time in Racing's history that they have scored from a corner kick in the NWSL regular season.
Somehow that tracks. I mean, I never kept track of that stat, but with the way that we've played the last couple of years, I can't say I'm surprised.
They had one last year that Bonner scored off of a corner kick in the Women's Cup. And then there was also one last year against Orlando. I don't remember exactly which game, but it was definitely against Orlando. Off of a corner kick, Jalen Howell headed it in, but it was called off for a phantom foul.
Oh, I remember the conversations around that. That was
maybe the start of us calling for VAR in the NWSL. Moving on to the even prettier goal. I could watch Ari Borges' goal 1,000 times and never get tired of it. I think it's an early contender for goal of the season. I said in our last episode that if Ari scored Racing's first goal of the season, that I would lose my mind. She didn't score the first goal of the season, but I still lost my mind.
Absolutely. And I, even before that, going into halftime, where I feel that we just started swinging the game back to our side. We were 3 minutes into stoppage. And if you go back and look, Ari Borges caused enough of a threat getting in and running it their entire back line that she almost elicits an own goal out of Washington. So is she a great playmaker? I mean, I can't even imagine how much better this can get once she's got the opportunity to really start to gel with the rest of the team. But just simply her individual efforts are terrifying. I mean,
and she's also only 25.
But I'm really optimistic to see what we can get with Borges as far as, you know, midfield development. You know, because you've got Howell, who, I mean, she's a known quantity. I mean, we know how good she is on getting the ball where it needs to go. And then ahead of her is Ari Borges and Savannah DeMello. I mean, this midfield is legit.
So we hung around after the game to talk to a couple of players as they came around. Jessica McDonald came by first, and I asked her, what did you guys talk about in the locker room? And she said, have you ever seen Space Jam and that locker room speech? So we laughed at that. And then I said, Jess, of course I've seen Space Jam. I'm even older than you. And I asked Laura Millay what she drank at halftime, because she came out like a freaking crazy person. She said crazy juice. But I noticed tactically, I think that the adjustment that was made in the second half was that they were playing more down the wings with the fullbacks and the wingers than they were through the middle of the field like they had tried to in the first half. So that got Pickett and Millay a lot more involved, bringing the ball forward while also getting Jess and Wong Shuang involved. We haven't talked enough about Wong Shuang either, because I think she only played like five games with us last year before she went back to China for a prior commitment. But now we're really seeing full-time Wong Shuang here. She is easily the most technically gifted player on the team and can carve up anyone and is so smart on the ball.
Yeah, it's actually a little surprising. I mean, out of all the best chances that we've got, it's not been that Wong Shuang has been present. It's that, frankly, she'd have the hockey assist. You know, she made the pass that made the pass that made the big chance happen.
Yeah.
I mean, she's been so instrumental in the buildup that it's easy to not mention her. Yeah. But if you were just to take this one touch earlier in the conversation, then, you know, this episode may have been the Wong Shuang show.
Yeah. No, I had the same thought. She might not show up on the stat sheet as much, and she might not have as many technical goal involvements of a goal or an assist as we, you know, might normally think of for such a gifted player. But she is going to be involved in a lot of goals this season.
So I don't have anything further as far as talking about our individual players. I will say that I think it's absolutely hilarious that our Swedish coach, it was cold and windy enough that he actually had his collar popped up.
He was wearing socks too, by some accounts.
I don't believe it. But I think this would be a good time to call out how we closed out the game. In the 76th minute, we did see Jalen Howell come back in for the first time this season.
Mm-hmm.
And Jalen doing Jalen things. I mean, yep. Great at pressing her defenders. You know, her, I think her individual pass completion was probably, you know, better than 85%.
Yeah.
So, you know, really good to see her get some minutes. You know, another couple weeks, let's hope that she's starting. And we saw Holloway rotate out to make space for Howell to get on the pitch. But most importantly, we got to see Pekka Jämsä rotate back to that center back position. Mm-hmm. That I'm really pleased with what I saw there, because I mean, the little bit that she was called into service as our center back, I mean, she's just as much of a beast.
Yeah.
So that's really the look that we had to close out. Now, I saw a lot of people absolutely up in arms online. There were only two cards issued to Washington Field players, and it was to the same player. So Medinger received two yellow cards, and people were screaming about, you know, why the last one wasn't, you know, brought back on VAR, because it's a double yellow.
Yep.
And so their VAR can't touch that. It's not in the rule set for them to be able to look at that. And so Washington is going to be able to go back and petition the league to rescind the one game suspension portion, but you know, there's nothing that can be done about catching the second yellow. It is what it is, and if the league reviews it and says, okay, you know, one or both of these may not have been quite severe enough for a yellow, then you don't have to serve the suspension. But going back and looking, yeah, she's gonna sit out a game.
I mean, I was gonna say, like, good luck, they're both yellows.
Yeah.
So that's it. So
And one fuss that I have on how the game ended, the refs called it a few seconds early when Racing was putting together a really good patch of development. I would have liked to see them give us that extra few seconds to see if it went anywhere. And if we got stalled out at midfield, fine, cool, call it then, but not in the middle of us, you know, getting to midfield on a really nice setup.
Yeah, and I saw Ari throw her hands up at that. I wasn't overly upset about that. Yeah, they were breaking and they had numbers and they were making good runs. At the same time, they were at midfield. You're going to see refs extend that a little bit if you're in the attacking third and have possession, because it's not 3 minutes of stoppage time. It's a minimum of 3 minutes or 4 minutes, however much it is. So the ref can add on some, but they're generally not going to do that if you're all the way in midfield. So I wasn't overly upset with that. I do see the frustration because I just wanted to see that play develop more than anything. But that being said, who's your player of the match for Washington game?
Pikiamsa, absolute revelation. I mean, this is the game that made me really understand how good of a signing she was.
Yep.
And outside of our goal scorers, I mean, even the team, when they put the Twitter poll up for man of the match, it was our goal scorers and Pikiamsa. And, you know, the goal scorers are always going to get it. But the fact that they recognized her contribution enough to say, you know, hey, this lady deserves votes. And she got votes. I mean, she didn't get blown out.
She got my vote. All right, let's run through some stats real quick before we wrap up. 11 total shots for Racing and 11 total shots for Washington. 4 on target for Racing, 5 for Washington. Again, a very even possession split, 54% to 46% in favor of Racing. Pass accuracy was 67% for Washington and 71% for Racing, which is a little bit lower than the opening game. But I am very impressed with it, with that wind.
Yeah.
Still being above 70%, which I think should be the floor of any game, the bottom end target. We still had 71% with that kind of wind. And then 3 corners for Racing and 5 for Washington.
Yeah, really even. And I mean, when you've got gusts of 45 miles an hour, you're it's going to always make an effect on the game. And I'm actually kind of surprised that those numbers weren't even possibly a little lower, seeing, you know, the real havoc it was causing on that field.
Yeah, and with wind like that, the most important thing to remember is whip in crosses, don't float your crosses. So to wrap that up, just going back to our prediction scoreboard, I predicted the draw in Houston and predicted a win at Washington. So I'm 1-for-2. You predicted a loss at Houston and a win for Washington. You're 0-for-2. FIFA predicted a loss in Houston and just an embarrassing loss against Washington. So FIFA is also 0-for-2.
Now, let's be fair. Both of us said 3-0 for Washington with us, the victors. And FIFA said 3-4 loss.
Yeah.
So out of the three of us, FIFA was closest on that one.
Well, I'm going by result.
Fine.
I'm not giving FIFA the credit on predicting a 4-3 because wait until we show you what it predicted for the next game. All right. Well, there's the whistle for the half. Players are heading into the locker room. Let's get into halftime adjustments. There were a couple roster moves right before the most recent game against Washington. Goalkeeper Olivia Sicani has signed a contract with Racing, and goalkeeper Kelsey Doherty has been waived by the club so that she can move to a new European club.
Really, I'm not surprised by this, just simply because it was a little weird that they had a non-roster invitee in the preseason that brought our GK count to 5. I mean, who the hell needs 5 goalkeepers?
Yeah.
And so it really feels like Doherty wasn't pleased with not getting minutes. And so even though she just signed with a club of midway through August of last year, you know, it's a little surprising to see her exit so soon, but it does show why Sicani was brought in. Mm-hmm. Do we need 4 keepers? Probably not. But if it's 4 legit keepers, I mean, that's a position that I'm very okay having a strength in depth. And let's be fair. I mean, Doherty, she was American playing in Sweden. You know, she struggled to get minutes here, and she's going to go back to where she's probably going to be a starter. And, you know, all the best for her. But who we brought in, honestly, it tickles me a little bit because Olivia Sakani, she's 6 foot. So we've got another big, big keeper. there's a little stat on her that made me step back and say, okay, coming out of the University of Washington, she holds the record for lowest goals against average. And the name under her on that list is Hope Solo.
Yep. I had the same thing written down that stood out to me. Now, does that mean we have the next Hope Solo? Maybe. I'm not going to say no.
Well, I mean, let's be honest. The women's game is changing rapidly. I mean, you know, we're not in a world where the U.S. women's national team is expected to win like it felt like we were for years upon mm-hmm. years. You know, that's not a gimme anymore. And so Hope Solo, you know, she was a big part of why we were strong through that stretch. But would she have been able to keep up with the modern game? That's a question, and it's one that we can't answer.
Yeah. So where does that leave Racing in your mind? What do they need positionally at this point?
Depth at center back. Oh, boy. Like, we've been popped with injuries, and we seem almost plagued by them at times. And so what happens when, you know, Howell picks up a knock and, you know, Ersig has to sit out a couple games because she's pulled a tendon. You know, who do we press into defensive mid? I mean, are we going to move Pikiyamsa up? My thought is no. We'll press another midfielder into that position. But our depth at center back is worrisome. And I'm still not 100% convinced at Rebecca Holloway being back there. Mm-hmm. Dude, get us a wing back so we can get Malay back in the midfield. Please.
I'm interested to see if they're going to put Paige Monahan back there at any point, like we were teased in the preseason.
I like it. I mean, with how strong she is as a player, I mean, I'm sure that she'd do well, because with the way we play, I mean, it's not like she wouldn't be spending most of that time forward anyway.
Yeah.
You know, it'd just be hanging here with a little bit of defensive responsibility. Yeah. And from the little bit that we have seen of her, I mean, defending in the high press, sure. So it's not apples to apples. There's not as much pressure to defend when you're the forward just trying to get the ball back. But she's done well.
Yeah.
I mean, I could absolutely see where she would thrive at that spot.
All right, players back out on the field. Let's kick off the second half. Looking ahead, there's actually only one game in between now and when we release our next episode, and that is away at Angel City on April 15th. Angel City lost to Gotham in their first game, but beat Orlando in their second. Could we be the first tough game for them this year?
Well, I think it's a little bit of a misnomer saying tough game, because one of the things that Kim Bjorkgren said when talking about this league relatively recently is there's no gimme games, and it's the first league that he's ever played in that's a thing. I mean, there's always one team that you're just like, okay, you know, they are Point Dispenser FC, but here they're all tough, and there's games that you would expect to win. And, you know, sometimes they just punch you in the mouth and take those points away from you. And one of those teams is the last team that they played, Orlando. I mean, we've talked about Orlando not being one of the powerhouses of the league, to put it kindly. And realistically, I don't think that they outplayed Orlando by a wide enough margin for me to be impressed. But if you go back with their run of form. They've only played the two games, so it's the only games we really have numbers on. Angel City has been averaging 57% possession, so they really, really like keeping hold of the ball. But what they're doing with it, honestly, doesn't impress. Their first game against Gotham, I mean, Gotham was shooting their lights out. There were various issues with VAR in that game, but you know, Angel City had 5 shots on target versus Gotham's 9. Angel City's 11 shots versus 15 for Gotham. I mean, Gotham was making the most of their chances.
Yeah.
And that game, there's a lot of people online that's saying the VAR stole that game, which I'm fascinated that that's a conversation, but I'll say that I'm not convinced that it wasn't stolen.
No.
Because that Endo goal from damn near midfield, the cheekiest, most beautiful goal that you could ever hope for, chipping the keeper off her line, was called back. And nobody has been able to point out why.
There's a foul in the buildup, is what they were saying. I did see some contact right before Endo gets the ball. Was it a harsh reversal of the goal? Pretty much, yes. But it wasn't nothing. So it was reviewable, as we stated, because there was a foul in the buildup that led to a goal. You can draw your own conclusions on how fair it was or how legitimate it was. But to get back to your point, yeah, I mean, Gotham had more and better chances.
And moving forward to Angel City versus Orlando, you know, Orlando, again, being a team that tends to be towards the bottom of the table, Angel City outshot them on target 6-3 and outshot them in general 15-12. So out of that, Orlando is looking like they were just simply a little more clinical. I mean, they weren't able to do as much with what they were given, but you look at these goals for and against, you know, that beautiful Alyssa Thompson goal for Angel City. I mean, that's a statement. I mean, she showed up in this league and we're going to be saying her name for a very, very long time.
Yeah.
But the Midge Purse penalty that got Gotham on the board, I mean, it was reviewed by VAR, and rightly so. I believe it was given correctly.
Yep.
And the second goal that Gotham put it away with, Lynn Williams was just unmarked.
Yeah.
I mean, in what world do you leave Lynn Williams unmarked and expect to win a game?
The all-time leading goal scorer in NWSL history.
And then moving forward to Orlando, the first goal for Angel City was a gift from a rookie. Emily Madrill, who I got to see play under the Racing Crest for our W League team. It was just a really bad bit of defending where she went in for a tackle when she was beaten and didn't get any of the ball. I mean, it was 1,000% the correct call, but it was a gift. If she had just simply not done that and forced the shot, I'd say that at that short range, it wouldn't have gone in. It would have been straight at the keeper or would have been wide at the goal. So that goal, absolute gift. I'm not going to credit Angel City with anything more than having somebody run at the back line, which goes back to our Mallory Swanson problem. But that was their problem to deal with, so I don't care how they think they're going to fix it. And then, you know, Bright, for the goal for Orlando, just split the defenders and shoved them off. I mean, again, going back to a failure of the back line that led to a goal. I mean, Angel City looks like they're going to be stricken with the same kind of defensive lapses that we were lamenting for ourselves last year. And the only reason why that one wasn't frustrating draw for Angel City was, you know, they managed to knock in a corner. Again, you know, it's a vital part of the game, and you need to know how to score goals. And very obviously, Racing just now figured it out. But, you know, that's another one. I mean, Angel City scoring goals of the run of play, the Endo goal was called off. So literally, the only one that they had was a remarkable goal from Alyssa Thompson in just about the same place as our Ari Borges goal. I mean, just outside the box, far corner, and there was nothing the keeper could do.
That was a beautiful goal. And I think that's also an early contender for goal of the season. 18-year-old scoring on her debut with a worldie.
Yeah.
Now, does she score that if Katie Lund's in the goal? Maybe. No, going back to last season, the two games that Racing and Angel City played were very, very, very evenly matched up. They split the wins. Angel City won the first game here with a late goal and then with a late penalty. And then Racing won in LA at the end of the season. And they were both very entertaining games because I felt like last year the two teams were very evenly matched in so many ways that just leads to very competitive, entertaining games. Racing got a lot better. And Angel City added a few pieces. Alyssa Thompson is dangerous. June Endo's dangerous. Savannah McCaskill is very smart in her soccer. But you want to talk about exploiting a back line. We have the players now that can do that. Our back line is much stronger. So I'm going to go ahead and predict this a 2-1 win for Racing on the road.
Well, looking at what I'm seeing from these numbers, I mean, Angel City really likes having possession. If we can frustrate that, I think that goal for them might be optimistic. Because when they do have the ball, I mean, very obviously, they're not really getting a whole lot out of it. But previously, I said that this one felt like a 1-1 draw. And the 2-1 draw, I completely see that. Because, I mean, you know, they do have the ability of getting off some beautiful solo efforts. But if we can play more like we did in the first game, especially with Piki Yamsa starting at center back, hopefully, I don't think they get those chances. I think this one might be 2-0 us.
Nice. I'll take it. I'll take either way. It's 3 points either way. Be sure to watch our Twitter page at LavenderLVL on game day. We will release FIFA's prediction and you won't want to miss it. It's amazing.
It's a hoot.
All right. The fourth officials put up the board. We're now into stoppage time. Another new face at Racing Louisville in the last couple weeks. New general manager Ryan Dell has joined the club. He was general manager for the U.S. women's national team previously, is in the same role for Racing now. And by all accounts, everyone really likes him and is very happy about this.
Yeah, that's the thing about some of these less public facing parts of front office is you don't really get to know them too much. I mean, I happen to know a number of the people at Louisville City because I'm very obviously a big fan of theirs, and I'm starting to learn the people in various roles at Racing, but for the U.S. women's national team, not so much. And so honestly, Dell has been a completely unknown for me. But I think the most striking thing was when Howell found out that he was in contention, she said to the team, "You need to go get him."
Yeah.
So it's not just that, you know, he was approved by the players. They endorsed him for the position. And so that says to me everything that it needs to.
Yeah. And not just players on our team, but even Carly Lloyd tweeted about it and said that it was a good get for Racing. She obviously worked with him a bunch during her time in the national team. And you almost get the sense that we're lucky to have him here based on what all the players that have worked with them say about him. So really excited to see what he's going to do. Take a lot of the things off of the plates of the players and the coaching staff so that they can concentrate on the soccer and let him take care of a lot of the stuff in the background, because apparently he's very good at that.
Yeah. And anything that's going to let Kim and Bev and Sergio focus on what they do best, I mean, it can only in the end help us get better. He's an unknown, but yeah, no, it does sound like we got a good get, and best case scenario, we never really talk about him again because he's just in the background silently making everything work.
Fair. All right. Other big news coming out of the NWSL today. They announced another expansion team coming next season in the Bay Area. That leads us to three teams coming, two next year and one after. So next year we'll be adding a team in the Bay Area and Utah. And then the following season in 2025, a team out of Boston. So three new teams on the horizon, two coming next year. And my first reaction to that was, that means more expansion drafts.
Yep. And you sent me a message earlier, don't get attached to this team because they're going to tear us up in the expansion draft. But my thought is, if we can manage to put together something strong enough, I mean, last year we only lost one player and frankly wasn't even particularly a key player.
Yeah.
So I don't know. We may be able to protect a lot of our assets, and who knows, we might get lucky. They might go back for the first time since Racing was the only one where they were able to protect 11 players. Well, I mean, if they go back and allow all the players to protect 11 this time around, it's going to make it that much better. But outside of the one for us, it's always been 9 players, and hopefully, you know, we can look at getting at least our starting 11 protected. That'd be nice.
It'd be nice, but we've been talking the last couple of weeks about how we don't, for the first time, we don't even have a starting 11. We have like a starting 16. We got 16 or 17 players on the team that could all start. That's how deep and how good we are. So even if we can protect the starting 11, yeah, that'd be great. But we're still losing potentially some very good players. So I don't want to bum anyone out at the beginning of the season, because this is a long ways away. It'll be well past the end of the season. I'm just saying enjoy it while we have it. So we don't know what's going to look like next year or at the end of the season. So
something entertaining, at least to me.
Yes, let's end on a high note, please.
Well, I do have quite a bit to say about this one, but you know, there was FC Kansas City that played in the NWSL and folded, and was able to get a team back there in Kansas City, who is now the current. It's not the same owner base, but when the Utah Royals were forced to sell, they went to Kansas City. Well, now the Utah Royals are back. Still different ownership group, but they even brought the name back.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, I'm just waiting for them to announce a team in Rochester and just, you know, we're getting the band back together, man. You know, all the dead NWSL teams come back. But there's a lot that comes out of that. First off, Del Loy Hansen being forced to sell, I think may have been one of the very earliest times of real change happening in the NWSL that has blossomed into all these other changes that we now see for, you know, protecting the players. Because the ownership was forced to sell because of just being an awful person. Now, let's be fair. If he wasn't an awful person to the men's team as well, I don't know if that change would have happened, but it was a positive change. Now, One of the things that I find absolutely fascinating from all this, when you start doing deep dives into the numbers, Utah paid just over $2 million for their expansion fee. This was negotiated as part of the contract for moving the team from Utah to Kansas City wholesale. I mean, literally just dumped the team over. And so it was written in that Utah could buy back in for what at the time was market price. Now, I can't find an exact number on what we paid for an expansion fee, but ESPN reports our expansion fee is believed to have been between $1 and $2 million. And so Utah being just over $2 million, they anticipated a little bit of, you know, valuation increase. They undershot dramatically because Utah and the Bay Area are both joining next year. Utah joining for just over $2 million, and the Bay Area buying in at an expansion fee of $53 million. I mean, what kind of growth is that? I mean, from 2021 to 2024, it increases. jaw-dropping. And, you know, Boston, you said 2025. I think I was reading 2026. But they're expected to pay in at that same mark at over $50 million.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I'm sure that nobody could have foreseen it, but wow, Lisa Baird really kind of shot the league in the foot by negotiating that clause in there. Man, so that's something wildly exciting for the growth of the league that, you know, not only are we continuing to grow year over year, but the valuations are, you know, real world huge dollar amounts. I mean, you know, this isn't something that people are going to buy in on a lark. You know, this is going to require, you know, effort and an ownership group that has the potential of getting their act together. And I'd like to think that short of a few, I don't want to call them missteps because that's a gross understatement, but by and large, the teams that have come in, they look to be well managed. Yeah. And you know, and it's not across the board. I mean, Racing is still struggling with the history that they've had. Kansas City, there's been an allegation of a trialist that was not properly supported, that the Players Association is going to be looking into that allegation. Mm-hmm. But in this day and age in the league, I would expect that the players feel more comfortable coming forward, and they're not. I think that real change has happened, and you know, these things aren't going to be, you know, the worst kept secret that they seem to have been before. I mean, these things, we're moving towards them starting to be a real exception.
Yeah, and I want to clarify my original comments on this. I am not upset that the league is expanding and adding expansion teams. I think that is amazing and even surprising in a sense, you know, in a good way, that in the last couple of years, we've already added three new teams with Racing, LA, and San Diego, and then three more are scheduled to come in the next couple of seasons. And there are more beyond that that are most likely being planned. That's fantastic. I want to see that. I'm just being very selfish and saying, keep your hands off my players. I want to keep them. Now, anytime an expansion team's added, and if they want to carve out an exception for Racing to where we can protect all our players, then I'm absolutely ecstatic about it. I just I don't want to lose any of these players because I really like them all.
Yeah. And from everything that I've read, going back to some of the earlier reports that stated that Utah and the Bay Area were in the pipeline before they were made official, It sounds like the league is in talk with a further 30 ownership groups. Oh, now, some of these are very obviously nowhere near as serious as the rest. But, I mean, you go back and you can look at some of the organizations that have declared that they have an interest. And, you know, Indy 11 had a bid in before we did. FC Cincinnati, whatever the F stands for anymore, because nobody knows or cares, had stated that they want to have a team. I mean, how wild would it be for the NWSL to grow enough that we've got two away days less than 2 hours away?
Yeah, that'd be fun. I've also heard Atlanta and Nashville and Toronto in the discussions too.
And that'd be three more within 6 hours.
Yeah.
On top of, you know, Chicago's right there. And my personal thought is Atlanta is probably the next one in the pipeline that hasn't really been declared, just simply because I think that they've got a really strong ownership group, and I think that it has a lot of potential. And as much as I made the joke about bringing back the Western New York Flash, it seems that the city of Rochester is just kind of cursed for teams. They're able to resurrect the Rochester Rhinos very, very briefly, which was a beloved team that was the only team since the MLS started to win the Open Cup, and it only lasted one season. There's just, I don't think that one is happening, even though they did mention very briefly about putting a women's team on the field. And let's not forget, I mean, there's tons of interest down the whole middle of the country that we're not talking about. I mean, Kansas City, it seemed like an outlier, and it doubly so after FC Kansas City folded. But, you know, they came back strongly, and, you know, you got to look at, there's other teams that they're not on either coast that could support more of these teams with big attendance numbers and, you know, sustained growth.
There's only one team in Texas right now. Dallas or Austin would be good markets.
Yeah, well, Texas lost the drag race to be the first state with three teams on this one.
Yeah. So. All right. Any other thoughts on that?
No. Expansion good, losing players bad.
Exactly. No, I'm trying to just keep that in mind. Expansion is obviously the goal and what we want for the women's game. It's a good thing. It makes me a little sad to think of losing players, but we don't have to think about that anytime soon. We'll burn that bridge when we get to it, much closer to the time. Well, there's the final whistle. We want to thank everyone for listening. Make sure to check out Butchertown Rundown next Wednesday. We will be back in 2 weeks. We will see you then. Bye, everybody.
Lavender Louisville is brought to you by Joe Havelda and Cody Ruth. Music by Tyler Lance Walker Gill. Logo design by Ryan Simpson. Contact Lavender Louisville on Twitter at LavenderLVL or email lavenderlouisville@gmail.com. Thanks for listening.